Oh, welcome into a daily editorial here on the KE Report. I am chatting with John Rubino, founder and editor of the dollarcollapse.com website. And John, you and I were talking off mic about what's driving these markets and all these news headlines and all these stories that everyone's trying to grasp onto to get an idea of future direction and what is actually going to happen, whether it comes to trade wars or economics or central bank policy. And one thing that I think we can both agree on is that there's a lot going on. There's a lot of different headlines that pop up throughout the week, but there doesn't seem to be anything concrete, just a bunch of rumors and a bunch of people guessing future direction. And that really keeps markets and investors handcuffed. And I think it sticks some markets into general trends, which is why we keep on seeing U.S. equity markets get bought back throughout the day and even throughout the week, and continue to see the U.S. dollar just generally grind higher. And then that also leaves us with the metals that are moving sideways to down with not a whole lot of interest. What do you think about this environment? Have you ever seen this before where there's just a whole lot of rumors and nothing actually getting done, nothing concrete happening?
Hey, Corey. Yeah, this is one of those in-between times, because normally there's some big thing for us to worry about, right? And it's very clear why we should worry about it. But now there's cross currents out there. There are a lot of things happening that are kind of bad, like the U.S.-China trade war. That's not a disaster, but it is scary. And it impacts certain industries like the chip makers and the cell phone companies. And you know, those guys are seeing really volatile action out there because this could be a big deal for them. But it's not earth-shaking. But it's there. And the yield curve in the U.S. has been flirting with inversion here. And it just did kind of in the last couple of weeks invert just slightly. And everybody knows that's a recession indicator. So that's got people a little bit spooked. And then home sales in the U.S. are starting to trend down, which is a sign of a slowing economy. And yet there seem to be labor shortages out there where you get these really funny stories now about companies so desperate for workers that they're recruiting from high schools, or they're setting up a booth at the county jail to get the inmates as they're released and hire them right away, or they're doing away with drug testing, stuff like that. You know, so that's a sign of building inflationary pressures, because you got to pay up if there's a worker shortage and wages go up, and that's wage inflation. And that's very scary for the markets because it leads the Fed to raise interest rates. And that's out there too. And then, of course, the Middle East is always about to blow up, right? And specifically this time, you've got the Saudis and the Iranians actually doing things to each other instead of just talking, where Iran is now accused of sabotaging Saudi oil infrastructure, although that could just be a false flag, which we in the U.S. use all the time to start wars, you know, so it could be just, you know, the Trump administration's strategy to give them an excuse to start a fight with Iran, which is pretty scary too, you know, but we don't know how it's playing out. Yeah, you know, nothing has really happened yet. It's just all this stuff building up that might be bad in the future. But none of it has actually turned out to be bad. And that's why the markets are so volatile right now. You get stocks tanking and then stocks soaring and different sectors doing different things. So the general tone is apprehensive, but neither terrified nor ebullient. You know, there's just kind of in between with a lot of possibilities out there, but nothing big happening. And that's kind of boring. It's better to have something to be excited about, or I guess it's not better to have something to be terrified about, but at least it's more clear. You know, you have a better sense of the world if there's a specific thing out there that's happening. And this isn't that time, but the world being what it is, something will happen pretty soon to push all this other stuff off to the side and clarify our attention. We'll be focusing on something. Maybe the next time you and I talk, maybe a couple of interviews down the road, but something big will happen and everybody will be focused on it for better or for worse, and the world will be clear again. But right now, this is not one of those times.
No, you're absolutely right, John. This is not one of those times. But again, I think that makes everyone kind of stick to their general plan. And that general plan for investors has been looking at the U.S. as relatively the best market to put your money into right now, with the weakness we keep seeing in Europe and the Middle East tension, which does always seem to be there. And now China is also struggling, and them needing to issue some easier money, or at least that's what they were doing a few months ago. Really, the trend remains very U.S. focused and more U.S. bullish than anywhere else, because it is a comparative game when you talk about where money is flowing. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, the funny thing is, if you're in the U.S., it's easy to look at our numbers and the way things are run here and think that we have a imminent catastrophe. Because we're taking on insane amounts of debt at every level of U.S. society. And that always leads to trouble at some point. But by focusing too much on the U.S., you can lose sight of how bad things are in the rest of the world. And they are pretty bad. You know, Europe, the European project and the Eurozone just aren't working. And it's completely possible that something happens to fragment the Eurozone pretty soon. And China quintupled its debt to get itself out, to get the world out of the Great Recession. Now it's dealing with the consequences of all that misallocated capital. At the same time, you know, the U.S. is threatening a lot of its previous growth strategies. So China is kind of a mess. So if there's any trouble in the world, even if there's the trouble originates in the U.S., it tends to send flight capital into the U.S. Because even if we've got problems, the assumption is that those problems will cause more trouble in the rest of the world than they cause here, you know, and so the dollar gets stronger even when the U.S. is the source of whatever problem it is we're looking at. That's not a permanent state of affairs, and neither is it a perpetual motion machine where the more money we borrow, the more demand for dollars are out there and the stronger the dollar gets. That's kind of how it is now, but it can't go on like that forever because it's also a license for us to continue to borrow insane amounts of money. And that's what we're doing. You know, we've got that unlimited credit card of a fiat currency printing press, and we're just maxing it out. You know, 10 years into an expansion, which is normally 3 or 4 years longer than a typical expansion lasts, we are cutting taxes in the U.S. The president is jawboning the Fed to cut interest rates and reinstitute quantitative easing, and we're running trillion-dollar deficits. That's really unusual for this late in the business cycle. Usually, when you get to this point where unemployment is low and the economy is growing reasonably steadily and there are lots of capital gains being generated in the stock market, governments' budgets get closer to balance. And we're doing the opposite now. We're ramping up our deficit spending even as a fair amount of new tax revenue come in to the U.S. So this is setting the stage for something really bad. You know, we shouldn't be doing this at this point in the cycle, and we'll pay a price for it. But right now, nobody's paying a price for anything, really. So everybody's confused. They see the problems out there. They also see the opportunities. They don't know which is the important thing to respond to. And so markets are vacillating. Again, that won't last. But right now, there's not a lot you can say with any kind of certainty about the short run.
Yeah, that's just the environment that we are in. But let's also get just a quick comment on the metals, because the metals right now, they're unloved, have been in this general downtrend. Sentiment is quite low, but they're not at lows that we saw from last year. However, again, with limited interest in the metals and also us really being in or coming close to the middle of summer when we see even less interest coming in, how do you balance out that contrarian trade where you say everybody is not paying attention, it's already washed out, we're due for a bounce, but we're also in this time of the year when we don't usually get bounces, or if we do get a bounce, it's not very strong?
Well, for the past 5 years, we've been in this same pattern where at the beginning of year, or really the end of a year and then January and February of the next year, gold and silver just rock. You know, they go up, and that's a seasonal thing because the Asians who like to give gold and silver jewelry as wedding gifts do their buying for spring weddings towards the end of the year and very early in the year. So gold and silver go up, the mining stocks go up, and gold gets close to that $1,360 an ounce U.S. Resistance point. And we see everything going up and we get excited and we think, okay, it's going to break through the resistance now and it's going to take off and buy those gold stocks. And then you move out of the seasonal period and into the sell in May and go away stretch, as they say in the gold market. And then gold and silver go back down. And we're shocked that it happened. But it has happened every year for the past 5 years, which creates a dilemma for people in precious metals, because if we decide that this pattern that's been in place for the last 5 years holds, and we buy big in the fall and ride it up and then sell big in early 2020, we might miss the final, the breakout that is eventually going to happen fundamentally. You know, gold is going to go much higher at some point in the future. And so every time it goes beyond 1300 and 1350 and starts flirting with 1360, it's a dilemma, because you can say, all right, well, I'm not going to be fooled again, and you sell out, and then it breaks through, and all these years of being a gold bug are wasted because you miss this gigantic rally up to 2000 and 2500 and 3000 that is definitely coming. Or you stay in the anticipation of that rally happening, and then you go back down into something like this, where you have to sit through 3 or 4 or 5 really boring months when your bullion loses 10 or 15% of its value, and your mining stocks lose 40 or 50% of their value, and you could have had all that money if you just sold out. So I don't know what the answer is, because I've gone through this for the last 5 years, and I've just been basically a buyer and not a seller in all that time. So I've ridden some serious roller coasters, and I'll probably do the same thing again. You know, in February, when gold is at 1350 and the mining stocks are up 50 or 60% from here, I'll force myself to take a little bit of money off the table, but I'm sure I won't be able to completely cash out of anything. So all I can say is I sure hope next time is the charm, you know, that gold breaks through 1360 and heads right up to 2000. And at that point, I'll feel comfortable taking a little profit.
That's fair, John. But I think we are still a little bit away from that trend or that move to 2000. But you know what? One step at a time. Let's get some breakouts to the upside, especially, well, if it could happen over summer, but I know a lot of the time frames have already been pushed back a little bit. Let's just see some more positive developments come into the metals sector. John, good chatting with you. Thanks again for your time, and have a great rest of your week.
Thanks, Corey. You too.